In today's Mishnah, so in the third and fourth Mishnah from the ninth parak, Masechta Nazir. And in today's Mishnah, so we don't really talk about Nazir. However, the common principle that is behind all the cases we learn in today's Mishnah is the idea of Raglaim Ledavar. And we mentioned that in the end of yesterday's Mishnah. Now, the concept of Raglaim Ledavar means is once we are detecting a trend in a particular direction, we can make particular assumptions. We can rely on the Chazaka, the standards that has been established. So the first case reads as follows. Amotze met batchila mushkav kedarko notlo vetfusato. So normally a grave itself one's not allowed to move. In times of the Beis HaMikdash, they would mark out these graves so the people coming to Yerushalayim wouldn't become tamemet. However, if someone simply finds a grave, a single grave, then he would be able to move it. But the Mishnah says, when he can move it, not lovet vusato, it also take the soil around the mace as well, into which the mace as it decomposed would have absorbed. The Mishnah continues then, matza shnayim, even if he found two bodies in the ground that were buried in a normal fashion, as if they were intentionally buried there, then not lovet vusatan, you'd be able to move them as well. And we would not be concerned that you've run across how we discovered a Beit HaKvarta cemetery. However, if matza shlosha, once you've found three, then the Mishnah says, im yesh bein ze laze, if there's at least a gap between arba amot until a gap of, say, shmona ma'ot, harezeh shchunat kvarot. Then we're concerned this is already effectively like an area that was intentionally used for burial plot. So what's these dimensions of 4 to 8? So if it's less than 4, meaning the bodies are buried almost on top of each other, or too close to one another, then the concern is that here this was just a chance burial location, the bodies were buried in a haphazard manner. Why is the maxima ma'ot shmona amot? That is because they would used to bury bodies in a ma'ara, it's like a cave. And the caves themselves was about 4 by 6 amot. So consequently, if we've got a body buried at one end and one corner, and body buried at another, using rules of Pythagoras, approximately it would be about 8 amot between them. So that's why we look at that region. If they're more sparsely buried, you've found three bodies buried at a greater distance of 8 amot from one another, then again we could simply concern these are individual plots and therefore they can be moved. So once we've already established that this area seems to be a shchunat kvarot, a burial cave or burial location, then you've still got to check around it. Meaning, bodek hemeno ulahalan esrim ama. You'd have to check another 20 amot from each of the bodies that you've discovered. And that is because what they would do is they would arrange these burial sort of ma'arot, one near each other. And let's say they're opposite one another, there would be a chatzer, like a courtyard, of about 6 by 6 amot in between them. Consequently, if the length of each of these ma'arot are 6 amot, and there's this chatzer in between them of about 6 amot, then from end to end it's about 18 amot. However, once again, if you remember, the width of these are about 4 amot. So if we're assuming the diagonal here would be approximately, once again, 20 amot. That's why we'd have to check in all directions 20 amot, because you have to be concerned that now we're actually not just dealing with one ma'ara, but a proper area, proper burial location that contained many ma'arot. Then Mishnah says, matza achad, even if when he does that search around the entire area from each of these bodies 20 amot, and he finds even just one other mace that was buried there, then we say, b'sof amah, then you have to continue that search for another 20 amot, because now we're concerned this is a proper burial area, this is a whole almost like a base of kvaras, and you have to check the entire area. Now recall the purpose of us checking all these things is, again, for the Olei Regalim, because if there's a field of discovering all these bodies, we want to make sure that no people that are coming to Yerushalayim become Tamemet, because that would prevent them from coming to the base of Midrash and then also offering their Korbanot. So the Mishnah makes a point here. Why do you have to keep on checking 20 amot even if you've only found one body? And that's based on the principle of Shraglaim Ledavar. Since we've already established various Shchunat Kvarot, these areas, these burial regions, even one extra body we find, we notice a trend, and then we have to check another 20 amot further away. Because if it was the other way around, meaning if we found that body in the very, very beginning, Shul Mitchila Matza'o, and we didn't know anything about the other ones, then we wouldn't have to do this check to these distances, the 20 amot, and simply not lovet vosato. So that's the first example where we have the concept of Raglaim Ledavar. That once we notice a trend, it forces us to check more thoroughly as a result of the concern that now we've got a strong assumption there'll be more bodies buried in this area. Let's now learn Mishnah Dal. This Mishnah connects three cases, and we'll explain as we go along. First one is kol safek negayim betchila tahor ad shelo nizkak l'tuma, mi shenizkak l'tuma sveiku tameh. We've mentioned the concept of negayim, the tzara'at, this spiritual affliction that manifests itself with a white mark on the skin. The Mishnah says, kol safek negayim, if you have a doubt in the beginning, before you've established this person a definite mitzora muchlad, then it would be tahor. However, mi shenizkak l'tuma, once the person's been established as being tame, I mean a definite metzora, then sfeiko tame would be considered tame. So to explain, once the metzora has a white mark on their skin and the coin is confirmed that it's the minimum size and the right color, they're, inverted commas, only considered metzora muskar. It's only once they develop another one of the signs, like either it expands or develops two white hairs, or there's a healthy region that develops in the middle of it, that they'll be called what's called a metzora muchlad. So in this situation, two people have presented themselves to a kohen. One has the size of a gris, which is a small size, one the size of a seller, and which is larger. End of the first week, they both come, and they both got the same size as a seller. So we now know that one of them spread, so it's a definite metzora, and the other one, really, nothing's happened, nothing's changed. So in that situation, since we've got a safek, and neither were established as a fully fledged metzora yet, then we can say that in that situation, this would be, he would be tahor. And the example I brought is with two individuals, but Rabbi Kiva said that would even be with a single individual, that if he had two marks, and we weren't sure, we don't remember which of the mark was the smaller of the two in the beginning. Sorry, that was Chachamim, where Rabbi Kiva says it's on the same person, we say Mimana Shachi B'Tameh. However, once the individuals have become affirmed as being Tameh, and then you have a suffix, which of the two became Tahor, as we said, we'd have to treat them both as being Tameh until we know for sure they are Tahor and healed. So for example, one's got the size of a gris, another one's got the larger size of a seller. End of the first week, they both grew to slightly larger than a seller. So now the coin confirms it spread, they are Metzora Muchlat. Now we have to wait till it heals or their size reduces. Later they both return, and now it's the size of a seller, both of them. So we don't know which shrunk to its original size, and which one has still got some distance to go. So therefore, since we don't know, they both have to be treated still as Metzora Muchlat until it would reduce down to, once again, back to the size of a geris, the original size of the smallest of the two. Let's continue with the next case. The next case we deal with a zav. A zav refers to a male who has had a particularly strange emission that would make him tameh. A zav, after two sightings, if he sees it twice, it would make him considered a zav. We'll learn about the laws later, but once he sees three, the only difference is now he'd have to actually bring a korban as well. So what the Mishnah says is that, again, we're going to learn about all this in a Masech that dedicated to the topic. However, Mishnah says now that initially what they do, they would check a zav from the outset if there would be another reason, another biological reason that brought about this strange emission, or would have been the cause, rather than it being developing on its own, if you like, and a result of this that would cause him to be defined as a zav, and therefore the source of tumah. So Mishnah says initially we'd check the machal mishnah if he overate or drank, the masa if he was overly exerting himself, say carrying something heavy, bekvitza if he was jumping from place to place, bechol if he was unwell, bemare if he had looked at women, for example, or behirhur if he had fantasized about women. In that situation, it would say that this is not a real zav, the fact that he had this strange sighting, it must have been brought about by one of these seven reasons. However, Mishnah is nisag leziva. Once he's seen the two sightings, is now considered a zav, in the sense that now he would be source of tumah, and now he sees a third sighting, in that situation, and if that was a sighting of a zav, then he would have to bring a korban. In that situation, Ebod Kimon, there's no need to do any inspections anymore, to check if there was any other factors that contributed to it. Whether it was onso, whether it was brought about by, again, some other factor that caused him to biologically to emit it in that way, or sveiko, if there's some sort of doubt related to it, or shichvat zara. In other words, we're not sure if this was a result of a normal emission, then we say, tmeim, in those situations, he'd be tameh waisha raglaim ledavar. Once again, same concept. If this person's already had two sightings, and there's been no other cause for it, so once we can see this person's trajectory, or we've built a picture of this individual, the third sighting, we don't have to try and inspect to see if there was other cause. We've already got a strong assumption that this is a third sighting of a zav. The final case that we've regained the davar to end our mishnas is as follows: if someone hit his friend very badly, and the Beit Din did an assessment, and they worked that this person is not going to survive the result of the blow. However, while in hospital, the person vekel mi masha haya, and he seemed to have a turn of improvement, ulachar mikan ichbid vemet. And afterward, the situation turned worse, and then the person eventually died. The person would be chayev. He would be considered a murderer, and if he was, say, pre-warned with two witnesses, he would also have to suffer a capital punishment. Rabbi Nechami says pator, he would be exempt because you can see he actually improved, so therefore the fact that he declined after that must be a result of something else. That's Rabbi Nechami's position. And Mishnah ends, Raglaim Ledavar. The question is, what's a raglaim ledavar? Is it referring to the opinion of Rabbi Nechemiah? And if the fact that you see him improves, we see that we build a picture of the individual such that really the decline is a result of something else. However, and some people say, no, that's actually the opinion of Chachamim. Meaning the fact that he improved, albeit slightly, It doesn't mean anything. We saw he was injured in such a severe way and he declined terribly. The fact that he had momentarily improved doesn't mean anything because we can build a picture that the fact that he declined after it must be a result of the original strike. And those are the Mishnah today.